we certainly appreciate all of you coming out and working together so that we can look at this subject. Appreciate Pat for arranging it. We had a similar setup a couple of months where we had both sides of this issue presented in a Bible study type format where we could really sit and hash things out, question each other, and I wish we had a little more time. I'm certain that would benefit us on this subject where brethren are divided. We have to take time and talk to each other and study these things out. The nature of this topic, there's serious consequences and great harm to consciences involved, loss of life is involved, and so we have to work together. Regardless of what side you are on, what I would ask that we test, as certainly here tonight, test each part of what I say. Look at it carefully. And at the end, make a note and ask me, what do you mean, to clarify, or how can you prove that? So we can get a really good look at this topic. This issue hit home to me during back in September when my employer set up active shooter training. And we had a speaker come in. Actually, it was a pretty famous guy. I think he trains our defense people in these type efforts. And he emphasized, to be brief, three main points to always remember. He said, commit these to memory, that it'll save your life. And those steps in the event of an active shooter was, one, if you can run, to do so, to run. Step number one. And if you can't run, then hide, he said. And finally, step three, no other recourse, he said, to fight. He said, grab a pen, anything to stab, to wound, to maim, grab chairs, and do your best to take the subject out. And it dawned on me that as he was talking, that I could see where I was authorized to do only two of those steps. To run and to hide. And when I got to that fight step, I started thinking through passages that would authorize this and why that thought is so prevalent. But I had to stop short. It is my understanding and contention that only two of those steps are authorized by the Scriptures. And I'd like for you, as I set out to show book, chapter, and verse for why I hold that view, test what I say. Test my argumentation. Because I contend that there are serious flaws on those that would oppose my view. I think a good way to begin this study would be to show what we will not be talking about. We scream it to the top of our lungs, but we won't be talking about who loves their family the most. I think brethren on both sides of this issue love their families. And I think both sides, I'm thankful there's not been a whole lot of killings on that other side, but I think both sides are doing well. with their families and the rearing of their children and loving them and protecting them and providing for them. And so I just don't think that's an issue at all. Nor will we be talking about what the governments of this world authorizes. To be frank, I think we all know when we're talking about the governments of the world, we're talking about apartheid, and abortions, and suicides, and promotion of pregnancies, promotions of the innocent, of killing, the killing of innocent unborn children. And so I'm not that concerned with what the governments of this world authorizes. And we know that it falls way below on any type of authoritative deal for the Christian, what man would think, what the governments of this world would think. I also, and I want you to listen to this one carefully. You know, what the Old Covenant teaches doesn't authorize the Christian. What God told Israel and how they were to behave under certain conditions, that is not how the New Testament Christian derive their authority. We need an apostle to tell us to move. We need Jesus Christ to tell us to move. We need a new covenant passage. You know, I'll hear brethren, they'll say, well, now, Jesus had a weapon. I mean, he had a, some of them, they've got him with a whip. And I'm going, okay, so what? You know, we don't worship in a temple. Jesus was under the old covenant. If Jesus had a sword, he'd have been justified. They were making a mockery of his father's house, like he said they were. Had he had a gun, he'd have been fine to drive them out. But the point being, that doesn't authorize the New Testament Christian anything. And then they'll say, well, now, boy, oh, Nehemiah, if you look at what he did. Now, he told, I mean, while they were back building the wall, they had weapons in their hands. I'm going, okay, so? That doesn't authorize the New Testament Christian anything. You might remember, there are serious consequences for going back and dragging an old covenant principle forward. You remember what Paul wrote in Galatians, that if you, those of you that will seek to be circumcised, you are deaded to keep the whole law. And he goes further, you see. You can't drag Old Testament principles and teachings forward and tie them to the New Testament Christian. Now, those things that were written aforetime, right, were written for our learning. Now, that's a far cry. I thank Brother Sutton. You know, that's a far cry, isn't it, from me trying to bind that on somebody. Now, there's much we can learn. We've heard all kinds of good lessons on Old Testament principles. You know, as for me and my house, we shall serve the Lord. Well, that's taught in the New Covenant. You know, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture. That's why we need to raise our children correctly. You see. Now, so these Old Testament principles, and then brethren will say, well, now what about, if this is the one they camp on, Exodus 22, 2 and 3. If a thief is found breaking in and he's struck and killed, then you see, right there, God allows self-defense. so? So what? You know, are you arguing that somebody breaks in on a Christian, that the Christian can kill him? Is that, you're dragging an old covenant principle up, and now, they don't claim that. They say, well, now I know, Rodney, that the old covenant isn't binding. And I'm going, well, then why are you talking about this thief back here under the old covenant? And they don't know, and I want you to think about this if you use that passage that way. It's a lot we don't know about that passage. That's one of the dangers of going back there. And I've cautioned brethren, why not do... You remember when God said, now don't work on the Sabbath. And then they find a guy out picking up sticks, you know. So what? They stone him? No. They're going, is that work? Like, does that cross the line? You know what they did? Nothing. Let's ask God about it. Now, they got a verse here. But they didn't know the parameters. They didn't know what it included. And that's how I, when I go back and read that Exodus 22 passage, you know, I wonder, well, if you killed him in the daytime, you were going to get killed. So you guys that's toting weapons around in the daytime, you claim you take them to the store and all this stuff. You drug those weapons, right, out of your home, and in the name of what? You see, this Old Testament passage. And why did God, why couldn't you kill the robber at the in the daytime? You know, why, at night, could you intentionally kill him? You know, if you intentionally killed a person, you were guilty of bloodshed. So when he broke in, if you said, I'm going to blow your, you know, if you had your sword, and I mean, could you do that? See, I'd have to ask, because I don't know. I can't tell from the passage. And if you read the commentators, nobody can tell. There is divided on that, but brethren have just clung to that idea of if a thief breaks in and have drug it up, kicking and screaming, into the New Testament. And if you look at that case that's built, that verse is hanging, it's right there at the forefront of that argumentation. An Old Testament passage. Jesus with the weapon. You know, he's got a whip. Nehemiah, he goes out and he smokes them, grabs them by the hair and yanks hair out. And my question is, are you arguing that if somebody's in a mixed marriage today, you could pull the hair out like Nehemiah? Are you arguing that? See, Nehemiah did that too. So to go back in the old covenant, and I'm camping here a little because I think at the core of that whole argumentation, and listen tonight, if there are any that oppose, they're going to go back and try to build this Old Testament hero, the valiant warrior. You know, Nehemiah said, now, come on, men, be of good courage. Protect your houses, your wives, your children. And I'm saying, so? You know, are you arguing that the New Testament teaches such? Now, you tell our Baptist friend, our Seventh-day Adventist friend, we warned them. Now, you don't want to go back there and start dragging Old Testament principles forward. You can't. I mean, Paul and others explained how difficult that law was under certain conditions. And we warned them about that. And you can't do that. And then here's brethren going to go build a case upon Old Testament principles. Who can believe it? But, neither will we be talking about gun ownership, because there's Christians here with guns. I've seen them in Christian homes, and I know they don't plan to do any harm with them. They hunt with them. That's a good use for them. They hunt with them. Animals. Things along those lines. But as we go, I want to prove or attempt to show why that third step, that step that would go so far as to kill a person in defending yourself or those that you love. Let me start with the example of all examples, Jesus Christ. Let me get my new notes out here. I didn't get a chance to get this out. Just bear with me. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. So I'm confident that Christ knows and understands the apprehension and the fear, if you will, of being threatened by a criminal. A robber, if you will. That he can sympathize with us. He lived here as a man, but he went through those kinds of things. And he did it without ever sinning and doing anything wrong. And Peter says, For to this you were called, talking about suffering. Because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. And that's 1 Peter 2, beginning in verse 21. Who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. Who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. And someone will say, well, now that's talking about retaliation. You know, not giving it back to them. And I'm going, but yeah, it's more than that. It's much more than that. You know, the context of that, Peter talks about a secular situation. You know, Peter says, now take a servant. What I want you to do, servants, is to be submissive to your masters. And someone might say, well, now, what if he's just a low-down, connive, mean snake? And Peter would say, well, now, not only to the good, but to eat the harsh, the bad one. And somebody says, well, now, that's just talking about, you know, if he just a mean boss. Well, no. You know what Peter goes on to argue there is if he beats you, you know, if you work for somebody and he beats you, get your gun, right? sharpen the knife on him. I mean, if he's out to get you, is that what the instructions were? No. No, do what your Lord did. And Peter points to Christ. See, when he suffered, he threatened not. And the reason I mention that is because there's this, and I'm going to call it this rabid attempt to create this third category. Excuse me. Brethren argue when we get over to Matthew 5, you know, they'll say, well, now that's just talking about little insults, they would tell us. you know, that ain't talking about this dirty, low-down, break-in-your-house criminal. And I remind them, well, what about what Peter said over here about this just out here in the work, just out here in the world every day? He said, take it. Turn the other cheek is what he taught. Nonviolent resistance. That's really what is taught there. Nonviolent, you see, resistance. And that's why, as we go, I'm going to ask Brent if he would. I want you to take note, and for our audience, there are strategies, you know, that Jesus used, the apostles used, disciples used when they were in harm's way. And we want to note those as we go, because one of the criticisms of the pacifist view is that somehow we believe you just sit there and take it. Let somebody hurt your wife. And they maintain we just that's what we're arguing, that just sit there. Let somebody rape your wife, hurt your kids, is right there, and you just sit back and relax. That's the way they paint us. And that's not what we're arguing at all. It's actually quite the opposite. You know, we're going to do all that we can to protect ours. And we do. People are doing it every day. And with the Lord's help, we've all made it. Anybody in here had to kill a robber? The Lord's been kind to us and will continue to be. Anybody had to confront a gun-wielding robber at night, and anybody had the knife at your wife's throat, or anybody threatened to rape your wife and just dare you to just blink? Anybody gone through anything like that? But that's what we're being told, isn't it? You read, I got his book here, Time to Kill, he would say. And boy, he really makes that thing. I mean, he got it out for those that don't believe in harming others. Hopefully we'll get to read some of it to you. But now, that's what they argue. That's the way they painted us, you see. And yet, we're doing fine. It's good, honest Christian brethren. And I mean on both sides of the issue. Everybody's fine. But see, it's this alarm. They have to alarm, see. And I think that's just the devil's ploy to get Christians going down an avenue that we dare not go. That you're going to have trouble showing book, chapter, and verse under the new covenant of Christ Jesus. Lots of trouble. But let's continue down this road just a little. So, let's talk a little bit about what Christ said about self-defense. If you would, turn over to John chapter 18. John chapter 18. There, beginning in verse 36 and forward, but in verse 36, Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. And I've maintained that brethren, and I mean good brethren, a lot sharper, wiser, better people than myself, I think they've missed this passage and what it's teaching. And I say that with all humility. I want you to read it with me. And see if this passage, because here's the way it's phrased a lot of times. That's the one. Now, Jesus is teaching here that you can advance the kingdom, you know, through military might. You can read all the commentaries. That's most of them say that. And you read what brethren say about it. That here, Jesus was telling Pilate, you know, that we don't use military might to advance my cause. You know, my kingdom is not of this world. And I say, no. That's not what he said at all. Not in this passage. I think it's taught. But let's read this passage and see what it says. Jesus says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight." And somebody says, "Well, now, right, that's what he's saying there, that he's talking about we don't advance the cause, see, through fighting." And I'm going, no, let's keep reading. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews." See, we don't self-defend. That's what he's teaching. That's what this verse says. You know what Pilate said? It went like this. Pilate says, "Now, are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus says, "Well, now, who told you that? Somebody tell you that? Or you learn it on your own?" Pilate says, "Well, now, what, am I a Jew? Jesus, am I a Jew?" And he says, "Look, your own people delivered you to me. Your own high priest." And he says to Jesus, "What have you done?" And Jesus says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight that I would not be delivered to the Jews." See what's being said? They would defend. You think I'm sitting here, I got this kingdom you claim? See, I'm here because I'm here, you see. Not my kingdom isn't of this world, because if it were, he said, they'd fight, make sure I wouldn't have got delivered to them people out there. I'm not standing here in effect. That's what that verse says. That verse doesn't say, to my knowledge, anything about advancing the cause of Christ. Things people that I've heard wrote about that. But now you test that. You've heard what I said about the passage. But it looks to me like he said, if my kingdom was of this world, we're fighting. And guess what? You look down, and guess what his servants thought? In Luke 22:49, it says, "When those around him saw what was going to happen, they said to him, 'Lord, shall we strike with the sword?'" Should we get it on with them right now? I mean, what do we do? You see what's being said? See, now, keep it in its context. My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. See, that's the part's been overlooked. That I may not be delivered to the Jews. Go try and take King David. See what happened to you. Go try and get King Solomon and watch the mighty men go to work. You see, that's what Jesus is saying. They defend Jesus. They self-defend. Kingdom not of this world. See, we don't do that. We don't behave that way. And of course, the end of the story. Pilate goes back and says, "Oh, hey, well, this guy ain't done nothing. This guy ain't done nothing. He's in there talking about non-resistance and stuff. He ain't done nothing." That's what it looks like to me. Now, if you disagree, I'd like some feedback on that. Amen or two, and I don't mean right now, at the end. Or you don't buy that. But I think that's what the passage says. That commentaries have influenced brethren's thinking on that passage more so than actually what the words say. That's what I believe.
I really do, because I don't see any, you know, this idea, you know, the kingdom, and he was talking about it being a spiritual kingdom. But that passage there, Jesus is saying, Pilate, my servants would, you know, I'm not delivered to the Jews. They fight that I may not be delivered to the Jews. That's what it says. So,
Jesus taught on self-defense when he taught, my kingdom is not of this world. This is a self-defense passage. You know, because self-defense, talking about protecting either yourself or those that, you know, that you love, you're innocent, those you're responsible for. And Jesus says, we don't behave that way. My servants don't behave that way. Now, that's a hard pill to swallow, but that's what he says. You know, just test it and see. And Jesus taught on self-defense in Matthew 5, beginning in verse 38, where Jesus says, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. Whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. Anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. And I've heard brethren, and he's not here. I wish he was. I found Keith to be a sincere, a nice, kind gentleman that we discussed this with. But he maintains that this passage has absolutely nothing to do with self-defense. Zero, he says, zilch. Well, okay. I tell you not to resist an evil person. And he says, well, now, and he told Pat, now you need to go and read, because what was happening here, he says, was that you notice Jesus says, whoever smacks you on the right cheek. And he says, see, a right-handed man, if he did that, you'd land on the left side. So Jesus wasn't teaching here this about this violent criminal. This was, if you go back, he says, and read and learn, what you'll find is that the Jews was misusing this verse. And they were using this as a means of vengeance. And what Jesus was doing was setting the record straight on this. And so this hit, he says, is a non-life-threatening hit. You know, and I'm thinking, if that ain't Mike Tyson doing this hitting, but be that as it may, I'm thinking, where are brethren getting that type of reasoning from this passage? See, again, I think commentaries have heavily influenced this thinking. The passages doesn't say that. And I tell you the context of the passage, and we won't take time for but I think we got good Bible students here. I think you'll be aware, familiar with what I'm talking about. But if you go back and look up the passages that deal with an eye for an eye, that's talking about violent crime. You know, that is the context of it. You know, two men are fighting, and hit a woman, and she goes into labor early. And if the child, everything's fine, no harm done. Whatever the husband says, you can pay it. But if harm follows, eye for an eye, you see, tooth for tooth. So he goes into that argumentation. And then, but brethren are going to tell us what Jesus was talking about here was an insult. When he says, turn the other cheek, he wasn't talking about the violent criminal or anything like that. What he was talking about was things like somebody try to revive you or get after you. We ought not do that back. And I went, no, he didn't say that. Let me read to you what he says. He said, but I tell you not to resist an evil person. It's a big difference in not giving it back and being told to take it, to suffer. You know, it's one thing getting it. I can't get them back. But it's a whole nother animal altogether to have an attitude of non-resistance. It's tougher, stricter. But that's what the passage says. I tell you not to resist an evil person. And they tell us that the robber, he's not in here. It's not talking about him. And yet, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, wound for wound, burn for burn. You know, that's the context of it. But they got this thing dumbed down to just, it's just a little slight. You notice Jesus said if he's hits you on the right cheek. And you know, if you go over and read Luke's account, Luke doesn't mention anything about a right or a left. Luke just says if he hits you, you know, if he smites you, just turn the other one. You know, that ought to settle it with brethren. That this didn't, you know, that whole theory of, you know, most of us are right-handed, they tell us, and that way, if you hit him, see, it's just not possible, they say. So, he could, see how silly? When you're sitting here staring in the face, eye for an eye, you know, you've heard. What Moses and them taught was eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, wound for wound. But I tell you not to resist them. See? And just like Satan, see, they want that passage. If that passage had said now, if a robber breaks in on you, take it. Well, no, Jesus said, you know, don't resist an evil person. If he hits you on in the face, just turn the other side to him. That's what Jesus said. He didn't have to use some criminal element that we have to have to be convinced of a thing. Jesus just said, if he hits you in the face, you know, hits you on the right side, turn it. Or Luke said, if he hits you on the left, you know, if he hits you, just the point is, don't resist. It's what you've been called to. It's what Jesus did. It's what Peter argues all the way through. If you're beaten for your faults now, that's one thing. But he says, but now if you beaten, you do good and you are beaten, he says, and take it patiently. He said, now boy, that's special to God. That is a whole nother ball game. That's what we've been called to. That's what Peter argues. And he don't use, see, brethren, he uses a secular situation. See, just out here, if you're working for a man or you're a slave, and he's mean to you, he beats you. He beats you. What did Peter say do? Sharpen the knife? Get ready. I mean, just don't take it. And if he tried that on your wife, I mean, you get ready and make sure. You know, just get ready for him. He's mean, old, just a low-down criminal. You see what Peter argues? See? We got a clear passage of a secular. You know, this wasn't talking about, you know, religious suffering. I mean, granted, if you were a Christian, it comes with the territory. All that would live godly in Christ shall suffer persecution. But, you know, we also suffer, and so did Jesus, in ways other than just somebody's after us because we're followers of Christ or Christ himself. You know, when we follow the speed limit, I wish Jeremy was here. He can tell. Boy, in Pennsylvania, when I lived up there, we...
every morning I had to, you know, I had, on my road is 25 miles an hour. Boy, now, I wouldn't recommend you, you know, just stay out of that area, because I got so many fingers and every day. And I just start pulling over, letting them by. I can't take any more of these fingers and cursings, because they won't buy. And seeing surely I'm trying to be the little old smart aleck, you know, just moseying along, taking my time. No, speed limit's 25, but we have to suffer. We have to suffer because of conscience towards God. That's what Peter argues in that series of passages. Because we want to do what's right. And that causes us a lot of problems.
A lot of problems when you try to do what's right. It's got nothing to do with, you know, because they after is suffering because we're a Christian. That's not why. See? All that would live godly in Christ Jesus, see, shall suffer persecution. That's the difference. So, let's keep moving. And Jesus taught on, my papers done got all jumbled up here. Jesus taught on self-defense when he taught that we ought to love our enemies. Now, I made this argument. If a robber isn't an enemy, you know, the enemies of the state, there's movies called Enemies of the State. You know, they're just bad people out to harm other people. They're everybody's enemy. But brethren say, no, that ain't talking about the robber. They say, see this attempt to get this robber over here in a category that's by itself. See, God didn't say that. You know, back here, back where, under the old, they got this robber breaking in, and God back then, see, God said, boy, you no blood gift for you. If he comes in on your family at night, get him. And that's where they camp. See, they don't try to. They're not trying to. They say, well, now, what is happening here? Rodney, I know we're not under the old covenant, but, see, they keep with, just keep back here with the Old Testament guy. They got directly. See, because why? Because the New Testament doesn't say one single word about a Christian causing harm to a neighbor or an enemy. That's why. And if you're here tonight, you're going to get an opportunity here in just a little bit to show the New Testament passage that authorizes the Christian to hurt another person, to use lethal force to kill them if you have to. You have to kill them. See, but Jesus says, you've heard it says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. So what did Jesus do? I want you to treat your enemies like the neighbor. He really, getting to us, you know, causing us to have to meditate and pray and struggle and fight to make this work in how we treat people. Enemies and neighbors treated the same. Love them. Cause no ill toward them. But they say, well, no, that ain't talking about the robber. It's just talking about an enemy here, you know, a guy that don't like you. It's not talking about the robber, they tell us. You know, he's the picture of an enemy. That's the dictionary picture of an enemy. He's an adversary of society, of people, honest people. He hates people. And that's what Jesus said, love them and do good to them. And I want to mention something. We won't camp here, but if you go down through this, love your enemy, love your neighbor, don't resist an evil person, what you'll find is some secular advice and some religious persecution type advice on how to treat people. That's what you'll find. But let's move forward. Jesus taught on self-defense when he says, now this is my commandment, that you love one another as I've loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. Now this is where I think most all of us in the room, what we hope we do is if somebody is trying to hurt our wives, is that we get in the way. That's what we hope and pray we do. And if you had to, somebody's trying to hurt one of our innocent family members and husbands and wives, that and Brent, you can put that down, you know, we could just lay down our lives for them. What about that strategy? See, none of us are talking about sit back and do nothing. I don't know anybody that believes that. That's just the way that's twisted, see, to make people, non-resistant people, look bad. To try to sell that, pawn that off on people. We've been screaming, no, we're talking about really getting into action here, you know. But be that as it may, Jesus says, you know, that greater love hath no man than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. So you could do that if it came down to it. You know, just put us out of our misery. Could, you know, that you have to witness all these, the rest of the atrocities or whatever, you know. But point is, you could do it. And Jesus taught on self-defense when he said, I want you to pray for them while they're hurting you. What? Did you say that again? Yeah. Father, forgive them. For they know not what they do. Just pray for them. Stephen, Father, you know, they don't know. You know, Stephen says, look, I see the heavens open, Son of Man standing. Don't get them for this, Lord. What about that strategy? Just pray for them. Brent, you got that one? Jesus taught on self-defense when he says, wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Now, I think these are, right, obviously these are just general principles. He doesn't give any specifics here. And, you know, when we're out here, we have to be smart and watchful and careful as we go out, as we live each day. And might watch the neighborhood we live in. That have a lot to do with robbers and all. But now time and chance, see, there's just no way to avoid all these things. You remember what Jesus prayed to God there toward the end? Father, I don't ask that you take them out of the world. Just watch over. What about that? See, he placed us in harm's way. I send you out, he says, as sheep. He placed us in harm's way.
Wives, you know, be submissive. What if he's mean? What if he's a bad one? You see, he placed us in harm's way. We have to pass the test. We have to endure it. He placed them. But we got brethren, arm in the sheath. Gun-toting sheep. That's pretty good protection, isn't it? I mean, sheep, what advantage the wolf got on the sheep is the sheep's packing, you know. Ain't no big. I mean, if you load it down here, what's the advantage on the poor sheep? Sheep's doing pretty good if he loaded down, you know, and he's got an attitude of, you come in here, and you're going to take your last breath, you break into my house and try to hurt my wife. Now, who can believe it? But he taught on self-defense when he says, now I want you to be smart out there. Be wise as serpents. But I want you to be harmless. Now, this word harmless, we talked about this. It's not, don't hurt nobody. This is the idea of being pure in thought. Because this is what this is what you have to be to do what Jesus and Stephen did. You know, when you can elevate the sinner, give him his honor, that Peter said, honor all men. You know, the soul is valuable. And see, on his way out, I mean, I'd hope and pray that if somebody was hurting me, that I could just bow down and pray for them. You know, have the presence of mind. That's what he's talking about, being harmless as doves. That's not that word, don't hurt them. It's the idea of just of being out here. No guile was found in Jesus. Just pure, unadulterated goodness, and where you can see people for what they really are. Because if you've got a little mess, it don't take long to get the fist ball. But, you know, like if somebody's getting after you and you lose your train of thought, it wouldn't take long, you know, for you to do what Peter did. You know, Peter and him got a sword and Lord shall we strike. And Jesus, this looks like Peter just went to work. You know. And even on that, you know, brethren will say, well, now there's the swords, the two swords. Remember, Jesus told them, when I sent you guys out, remember, did you lack anything? The apostle says, no, we made out good, you know, when we went out. And Jesus says, well, now I'm just going to have to die. And now what I want you to do is, you know, I told you back there before, don't take no knapsack, don't take no extra sandals, nothing like that. But now, I want you, if you got some clothes, you need to go out and let him take his garments, sell it, and buy a sword. And brethren says, see, I told you. And when you told me what? You know, now I've got these plain passages to hang. You told me what? Well, the swords, they said, so that you could get a hold of the robbers. Well, let's go read this again. So you can do what? Hurt a robber. That's what they tell us. It's what brethren are arguing. Is that what Jesus said? And I won't go because I'm actually fixing to speed this up a little bit. Really, the context of the two swords is found in Matthew chapter 10. And Jesus
said that the worker is worthy of his food. That's the context of the two sowers. When he sent them out, he told them, don't take anything. And I want you to test this. I don't want you to take anything with you. And the point is, a worker ought to be paid. That's the context. And then over here, brethren say, well, now, when he told them to get a sword, see, look, what he was saying was, now that I'm gone, you're going to have to defend yourself. See, they introduced a whole new subject into what Jesus had been talking about. He asked them, when I sent you out, did you lack anything? Did you lack anything? Did y'all eat okay? Did y'all make out okay out there? And they said, yes, sir. We sure did. That's the context. What I argue the swords were for, and I don't know, you know, I just know they weren't to go and hurt nobody with them. Now, Peter was a fisherman. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Paul said that I was in pearls in the wilderness. I think Brother E.R. tells a story of when he was out in the wilderness. He was knew it was heavy bear country, and he went and applied for a gun permit. Or wanted to see what he had to get a weapon. And I know Christians here that's got guns, and they never think about shooting another person with it because of these passages we just mentioned. But so you tell me, you know, what the swords were for. From the passages, just from the context of the passages. The two famous swords, I contend, had something to do with the fact that the laborer is worthy of his hire, that the worker is worthy of his food, that it was about making a living. That's what I argue. I don't know for certain. I just think I know what they weren't for based on other clear passages. But maybe you know, and maybe you can tell us here in just a few minutes. When Jesus said, when they persecute you in this city, I want you to sit there and take it. In Matthew 10, verse 23. No, I'm kidding. Jesus says, when they persecute you in this city, flee to another. You know, you can run. That's why I opened up my dialogue saying, now we can run if you have to. You know, Brent, you got that one. You know, you can get out of Dodge and get your family out of harm. I mean, that's what a lot of us would do, isn't it? You know, we just try to get away. Is what I'd be trying to do. So, see, the first, the active shooter guy, he got that one right. Run, you know. And then he says, hide. Well, guess what? I got Jesus hiding. I got Peter hiding. I got Paul hiding. I got brethren sneaking Paul out down the wall. You can hide. You're actually authorized to hide. Paul hid. Brent, put this one down. You can call the cops. Paul called the cops. He gets word of a plot, tells his nephew, now look, you go get some law in here, you know. Get some help. I need to get some get somebody to protect me. And brethren, guess what brethren ask us when we say that? They say, well, how can you call the cops and claim it's wrong to hurt people? He hurts people. Because Romans 13, God gets him to hurt people. what Romans 13 says. He's an avenger. He's God's avenger. But I'm not. You're not. Christians aren't avengers. Christians can't avenge anything. It's like, you know, here's Babylon. God uses Babylon. You know, He uses this nation. He's my rod. And it'd be like the Jew going and joining Babylon. And Heppen, he's God's avenger. That's what it'd be like. Christians can't avenge anything. Not according to these clear passages. But be that as it may, Jesus taught on self-defense when he said, you can run. And Jesus taught on self-defense when he says, do not fear them. I remember years ago, Brother Sutton, I asked him, why do brethren disagree with us on this topic? What's the deal about getting gun permits and stuff? And he says, Rodney, all they can do is kill us. That's the worst they can do. That's right. That's what Jesus said, isn't it? Don't fear them. Fear not him. See? Who can kill the body? So we can be courageous, friend. We can be courageous. Pat. You set up a bad setup. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to stop. And if anybody want a copy of these notes, you're welcome to them. Because what I did at the end of this is tried to answer all the prevalent arguments that are made. You've heard some of them tonight. You know, the Exodus 22 passage, if a thief's found breaking in. You know, if any provide not for his own, brethren, use that verse and say, well, now, see, we're supposed to provide. And again, I've asked the audience, everybody's doing pretty good in here. It's been providing pretty good. I don't see any hands on Robert. I mean, I know, I don't know why brethren are quoting all these church, all these shootings and killings and stuff. I really don't get why brethren are, I know we're in a bad spot. Don't get me wrong. I sympathize with every massacre and atrocity, but I don't get the fear and what we're supposed to be doing, where we're headed. I really don't get the alarm. But what I'm going to do now, we got 21 minutes. If someone would like to ask a question, if you want to write it down, feel free to. If you want to ask me one, ask me one. I went through and made a list of how God views the body. So that this idea of, boy, that's my wife you're talking about here. Somebody hurting her, and I'm sitting here and I'm going, when I see Paul, thrice was I, I don't know what Paul looked like. But it couldn't have been good with the beatings he took and what Jesus went through. But when I see what brethren went through, why brethren are arguing this self-preservation doctrine when you don't find that in the Bible. That's foreign to the Bible. You see just the opposite. You go from New Testament cover to cover, you don't find
it's quite spooky that you don't see any violent resistance. I mean, except Peter's famous case, where he did wrong, you know, by grabbing a weapon.
Rodney,
yes.
Done
too long. All right, everybody, get a little stand up. And while you're doing it, who got a question? Yes, sir.
Say it's okay to have the authorities for you, but you can't do it.
Well, I'm saying that God said in Romans chapter 13, the powers that be, I did it. They're my avengers. I'm saying that, yes, God told us through Paul's actions that you can call the cops. It's okay. Because Paul did. You know, Paul says, you know, that the things that you've seen and heard, you know, it's okay for you to do them. And he called the cops. So I called the cops. It's just that simple. Right? I mean, that's right, isn't it? Like that Paul called the cops. So I called him. Because he called them. Because the apostle called them. If the Bible was silent on that, I'd be silent. But it's not. It's okay to call the cops. Yes, sir.
They're God's power to do that.
Yeah.
Not mine.
Yes, sir. I agree. Amen. All right. Yes, sir.
Just to clarify, if I understand things right, you said one time when we were talking, or did you, that... yes, in fact, we have the right to call police officers, but police officers commit sin when they hurt someone or kill someone.
I think they are sinners. Yeah.
But they are committing sin when they're committing that violent act. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think they lost, that God uses lost people. Romans 13.
So a Christian can't be... It's not possible for a Christian to be a police officer because they are committing sin anytime they commit a violent act.
Well, a Christian can't commit violence.
Right.
Yeah, they'd be sinning. Yeah. Every time the Christian does something violent, he sins. Like if he tried to go, if he tried to do what Nehemiah did, grab hair, you know, you get so righteous indignation that you grab a Christian by the hair. You sin every time. And if you grab the whip like Jesus did and hit somebody with it, run them out of the church building, you'd sin every time you did it. Yeah.
But the reason Jesus didn't commit sin is because he was under the old covenant?
Yeah. Well, and so Jesus never sinned.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So we can't use him as an example for that.
Not for carrying a weapon. Uh-uh.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I'm just playing.
Yeah, 100%.
Is it possible, if I understand right, understand you said that Babylon was God's minister for justice in a way.
You agree with that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And in Isaiah 10, Assyria would have been also.
Yeah.
And he describes why it was that they sinned. It wasn't because of what they did. It was because of their attitude when it was done. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
Would you... Yeah. You probably don't have time now.
Yeah. But well, I think in short, what God done is he used sinful nations to punish other sinful nations and then turn right around and says, I'm going to get you for what you done. That's what he did.
But he doesn't say that.
Yes, what it says. We'll try to show you, or you can show me, you know, otherwise. Yes, sir.
Where was it that Jesus rebuked
Peter for his actions? Matthew 26, verse 6. Yeah, but... What verse are you wanting to look at?
I'm asking, where did Jesus rebuke Peter for his actions?
Oh, when he told him to put your sword up?
Right. Yeah, that's what I was.
Matthew 26, what?
52.
You just looking for that passage?
Yes.
Okay.
Anybody else got a question? Yes, sir.
What do you think about, I might disagree with anything you said. I'm just curious what you think about using a weapon as a visual deterrent. You don't plan to use it, say, okay, I have this weapon. Back off, even if you don't plan to use it.
Yeah. You know,
you may be tempted to then use that weapon, but
That's my thought, but, you know, we got a member at our congregation that believes, you know, and he, I think he's actually trained it, but he said they got a weapon and somebody breaks in. He told his wife, I want you to shoot up, up above up there, because you know they're not that tall. Now, you better hope, you know, my new bow won't show up, but anyway. He said, just shoot up top up there, and, you know, hopefully that'll rattle them and all. And hopefully, here's what I hope we can see the problems with that. You know, just the slippery slope we're dealing with. Now, we got a lot of good strategies of running and hiding. But I don't know any stronger than prayer. Now, brethren mock that when they say, oh, you're just going to pray to rob, you know, don't pray the robber away. No. No more so than Stephen was. No. We love all. And if we're clear-minded, we can pull that off. Like Jesus says, if you can become harmless like a dove out here in this world. If you could pull it off. Now, tough job, because I think, and especially in this time we live in, giving it back to people is pretty popular. So all I can say is just, you know, good luck to all of us. Yes, sir.
I haven't ever been in the opinion he's legal for us, but I did think that she fought back. Because there's plenty of ways to incapacitate a person non-legally.
Hmm.
Such as pepper spray and tasers and stuff. And just
they say things. That stuff hurts. I mean, what I mean is, you know, Jesus says love does no harm. What?
We don't understand why they didn't trust Jesus.
Excuse me?
Lead us not into temptation.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And realize, 1 Corinthians 10, that he will not allow us to be tempted above that which we are able, but will supply the way of escape.
Amen.
Oh,
but yeah, I agree. Yeah. No, that's really right. Look, we're called to it. He's telling servants, if you, you know, don't retaliate, don't resist. It's the price of discipleship. And it has to be weighed, but we have to do it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
This is obviously emotionally charged.
Without question.
I've never really sat here and studied it like this. So I'm appreciative of this opportunity, this venue. What I've seen, if I come around, if I gain wisdom, I gain spiritualism, often Christians, but people in the world also, are too much in love with the physical place we are. Mm. And we forget that this is not a home. Mm. Heaven is a home. Mm. And we put too much value on our material possessions, on our whole lives, on our physical lives, and the lives of our families. Mm. That's difficult for people to grasp the idea now.
Mm.
That there's something there, a big what if, something were to happen, and I'm not prepared myself to spend my time in like the world would. Could I ever live with myself after?
Mm.
So it's a difficult problem to face personally. Because
mm-hmm.
if flesh conflicts with the spiritual side.
If we're not,
I'm saying that I agree with you right now, but I'm going to see how charged it is.
Yeah, and it, you know, in the garden, Jesus tells Peter and them, and I hold the view that he was trying to prepare them for the subsequent events when he says, look, watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. They're in the garden. Well, them guys are asleep. See? Now, here it is. I mean, it's a night. You're going to have to really have your act together out here. I mean, they come in to take Jesus. See, Lord, shall we strike with the sword? Now, they got how many? How many swords are present there? There's two, ain't it? You know, because they said, look, here's two. And he said, now, it's enough. And, of course, enough for what? The sword, brethren. They tell us that it's okay to have them. And they, here's two, you know. Jesus says, now, sell it. They make it like Jesus. The sword was so important. If you have to sell the shirt off your back, go get one, they tell us. That ain't what Jesus said. Jesus just said, look, let him, you know, if you don't have a sword, you know, sell your garments and get you a sword. And then he turns around and they say, well, look, here's two. And I've always asked brethren, when they went out, did they have them swords with them? You know, brethren, they make like they know the answer to that. Anybody in here know the answer to that? Like Peter, the one Peter grabbed, did he take it with him on the journey? See, they just, what I mean is they got this image of the apostles, you know, standing watch and making sure nobody hurts nobody. That's the image. You know, they picture, I said, when Paul went through, Paul said, pearls of robbers. You remember when he talked about all he went through, pearls in the wilderness? You know, Paul got snake bit fooling around there on out there in the world. You know, he could have used a sword. You remember Paul, the snake gets him, poisonous snake. That would work out there. Pearls of robbers, though. Pearls of robbers out there. What do you do with them robbers? Paul went through that too. What do we do with them?
I think you said you feel like it would be okay to call the cops in a certain situation.
Yeah, just because the apostles did. That's why I think we can.
So, if a cop coming in and committing some type of violent act towards a thief or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, are you saying it's okay for us as a Christian to cause someone else to commit the same?
We didn't cause anything. God did that. If that makes sense. I mean, we didn't do that. All we're told to, Paul said, now if you see me doing something, and I'm paraphrasing, you can do it. What you've seen me do that's authorized and all, you do it. And I called the cops because Paul called the cops. That's why. Yes, sir.
I appreciate that, but it seems disturbing to me that after you said that Jesus was the example of examples for him. We can do what he says, but not what he does.
But I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
He's not a perfect example in his behavior because he's under the old covenant.
Who?
Jesus. But he's someone who follows what he says. That's kind of disturbing.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
He said that it's not possible. For instance, the idea of him cleansing the temple not once but twice at the beginning of his ministry at the end.
Probably.
That's not something that means anything to us because it's under the old covenant, the idea of righteous indignation, how he handled it.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay.
What I said is that brethren that try to argue that it's okay to have a weapon to hurt people, they say, look, Jesus hurt people. They say, Jesus had a weapon in there and he got after them. And, I mean, my first reply would be, are you aware that Jesus lived under the old covenant and he's in the temple?
He says, you know, you've made my Father's house a den of thieves.
That implies that he did something that he wouldn't be able to do under the new covenant.
And so, what are you saying?
What I'm saying is he is not a good example for us, if that's the case.
You are aware that he came preaching the kingdom, right?
Indeed.
The new covenant.
Indeed.
Place. Yeah, he did that too. So,
so we can trust his word, but not his deeds.
Well, anything done under the old covenant, we're not bound by that. That makes sense.
So he's not the example of sin.
Absolutely. Well, we can only use that example. There's more description of him actually using it.
But what I try to point out, and I think it's helpful that we just get used to not using the old covenant to bind practices. We can learn from the old covenant. All right, we are at 7:57. Again, thank you all for coming and for all that you've done by way of supporting the truth. And I'm open, anybody wants to, you know, continue this further, anybody that wants a copy of these notes, you can talk to me or Pat.